This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Nally. Our guest this week is Dwayne Simpson, President and CEO of the National Council of Farmer Cooperatives. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by the American Sugar Alliance. America's sweetest industry creates jobs and provides a sustainably produced food ingredient. Learn more at sugaralliance.org. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with Dwayne Simpson next. America's 11,000 sugar beet and sugarcane farmers count on a strong U.S. sugar policy to keep American consumers supplied with an essential ingredient. Better yet, it's designed to cost taxpayers nothing. These farmers support more than 151,000 jobs throughout the sugar supply chain in both urban and rural communities. They contribute over $23 billion to the economy each year and help keep it sweet in America. Learn how the Farm Bill supports sugar crop farmers and workers at sugaralliance.org. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. The National Council of Farmer Cooperatives recently welcomed Dwayne Simpson as its new president and CEO. Simpson brings a wealth of experience from the private sector as well as producer and retail associations. Simpson sees a bright future for the nation's cooperatives.
I think that the future of the organization is really about how do we modernize the work that we do? How do we meet the moment in politics that exists today that, you know, politics isn't, you don't do ag policy the way we used to with a handful of champions that you can call on Capitol Hill and a dear colleague letter that they write. You have to be able to extend your influence to large coalitions of stakeholders and beyond that to farmers directly, the board members and our cooperative leaders, so that we can drive a grassroots, grass-top strategy that requires much better communications skills, much better, use of things like social media, to hit these policymakers where they're at. They are responding more to signals that they receive from social media than they are from, the typical polling data or, quick check of the so-called kitchen cabinet that they used to use over the years. Now, all of that shoe leather lobbying work is still important, and we need to do all of that type of work still today that we've always done. But, I think we have to modernize the way that we work with policymakers, and frankly, the way that we try to help our farmers, our farmer owners and board members and our cooperative leaders, how we help them engage so that they can still be heard in a way that the members on Capitol Hill are listening to.
It appears to me that we're on the cusp of what I would suggest a cultural change in the country, whereas the attitudes of the consumer, the attitudes of particular groups are driving the direction of an industry toward the marketing perceptions that are presented of the products that are offered on shelves.
I think that that's true, and I don't think it's new. I think that you've seen this happening from the early days of, you can go back to, RBST-free milk, which was then, hormone-free milk, to GMO-free labeling, to pesticide-free labeling, to, obviously organic sustainability. Food companies and restaurants are going to market to consumers in any way that they can. Probably the most overused word that has very little meaning is natural or all natural or those types of things. I think that that's always been the case. What's changed in the last few years is that we've started to be able to measure and put a definition around some of those marketing words. And as we've done that, some of the first users of those marketing words have had to move on and try to find new words to use. And then agriculture has risen to meet the demand. Farmers don't think of themselves as GMO farmers or pesticide using farmers or what have you. They think of themselves as, you know, corn growers or soybean growers or cattlemen or dairymen. And that is, you know, they will produce to what the market demands they produce, as long as that production is something that is financially sustainable for them and obviously, you know, meets the, you know, my definition of sustainability that I think every farmer has, is a sustainable way to grow a crop or whatever you're raising so that the farm can be passed on to the next generation and that they have the same opportunity that you had. And that type of farmers will meet that market demand, but it is absolutely going to shift the way we grow crops, and the way we raise animals and milk cows and, you know, every part of agriculture. That's going to continue to change as consumers pay more and more and more attention to the food that they're buying in the grocery store aisle. And frankly, as they have more access to data about how that product is raised.
And the joy that we have in the U.S. is an ample supply of food. If you want organic, you can buy organic. If you want hydroponic, you can get hydroponic. We have the ability to provide a lot of food from different sources. So today the new word is regenerative agriculture, and that's being floated a lot by the Maha Commission as we discuss what the future of food production should look like.
I think the difference between regenerative ag and sustainable ag is, you know, as I said, with sustainable ag, you are trying to keep the farm, you know, both financially and environmentally sustainable for the next generation. With regenerative ag, you are looking at practices that actually try to improve the quality of the soil or the quality or quantity of the water, you know, some of those resources, whether it be through soil health or something else. This is another one of those terms, though, that I believe is measurable. I believe that you can look at the quality of the soil and you can measure that, and then you can implement a new practice and find out if that new practice has improved the quality of the soil. You can do the same with water, obviously, and measure the quality of the water or how clean the water is, et cetera. I think that when you do that, that the term regenerative will follow with sustainability and other terms, to be one to where modern agriculture and those tools are going to be an absolutely necessary part of being able to meet that demand and truly improve the soil and improve the water that you know feeds our farms. And we need that. And that's a good thing. Until we get to that point though, you know, you're going to see people use this term as a marketing term, and people that oppose some of those modern ag tools are going to move from one term to the next until they find one that the public likes that, you know, you don't have to prove yourself. You know, the ability to prove that you are producing more with less is measurable. That's a measurable thing, that being able to improve the soil or the water is measurable. And in that case, I trust that the American farmer is the most productive farmer in the world. And I trust that the tools that they have available to them are going to be able to prove that they are able to do exactly that. And so over time, I have every confidence that things like regenerative agriculture are going to continue down the path of allowing farmers to use the tools that they need in order to meet those demands.
It's a challenge for those that I have spoken with as producers of the headwind that the Maha Commission has presented about the way that food is produced, about farming. Your cooperatives in the country are looking for a future, and you're facing some tremendous headwinds, not only in the court of public opinion, but also in Washington and among government agencies. There's a lot to do here.
There are a lot of headwinds. You know, whether you're talking about, you know, having market access due to trade, or increased cost for inputs due to trade issues, you know, you have, you know, things like finishing the Farm Bill, and of course, Even the Maha Commission, when the first report came out, you know, agriculture didn't have a seat at the table. And so, you know, we have been working pretty hard to make sure that, and to the White House's credit, that we've had a seat at that table. I think that the final end game of this, though, does have to be that these proposed policies that come out of this have to go to the appropriate agencies and to Congress. And when they get there, they're going to be subject to, you know, public comment. They're going to be subject to testimony, and they're going to be, you know, debated appropriately as they should, rather than you know, written by a commission that hasn't had any public meetings.
Budget reconciliation resolved a number of challenges for farmers, but it didn't solve it all. And we're not far away from the extended farm bill from running short of some current policies and either fall off the table or have to be renewed again.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, people call this a lot of different things, the skinny farm bill, farm bill 2.0. I prefer to just say finishing the farm bill. We have to finish the farm bill. We did a lot in reconciliation in the One Big Beautiful Bill. You know, most of Title I was taken care of, right? Farmers got their first raise that they've seen in a long time. There's some outstanding tax policy, some that is hugely impactful for cooperatives and for their farmer owners around the Section 199 A and G, you know, that allows them to pass through those tax credits onto farmers. So, you know, $2 billion worth of tax relief that we saw. But that's not enough, right? The entire conservation title still needs to be passed. The entire farm credit title still needs to be passed. The research title needs to be passed. And there are important programs that are still out there. We want to strengthen the Buy America rules for schools to support U.S. ag and, you know, obviously promote food safety. I think that MAHA would support that, actually. You know, there's a value-added producer grant program, the beginner farmer programs. You know, there's a lot of really important policy that needs to get done. And candidly, I don't think either chairman or ranking member in either house wants to be the people that are responsible for the first time ever having to extend the farm bill three times. I think that there is a lot of desire to try to figure out a bipartisan path forward to get this done before the end of the year so that we can finish the farm bill and move on to other issues.
I don't know that production is going to be able to offset the financial plight of a number of producers in the country. And if we are adequately financed and positioned with kicking the can on the farm bill again from some of the credit limits that agriculture faces today.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think that the pieces that were in the reconciliation bill, you know, improve the safety net. They do a great job of doing that. They, you know, farmers got their first raise in probably a generation, you know, with reference prices. And that's all really important. But you're right that we have to finish the farm bill so that not only farmers, but, you know, cooperatives in the farm credit system can operate as it's intended to. And you know, this isn't even controversial. These aren't the issues where you have the partisan fights. These are things that have broad bipartisan support. And we need Congress to finish the job. And, you know, I've heard commentary from, you know, Chairman Thompson, Chairman Bozeman, and from ranking members, Craig and Klobuchar, that they are interested in finding a bipartisan path forward to finish these very important programs before the end of the year. And so, you know, we're standing ready to help. And when we talk to farmers and we talk to the cooperatives, we're asking them to you know, reach out to their members of Congress and encourage them to finish the job.
There is some heavy lifting yet to do in Washington and in a limited amount of time on the congressional schedule. The farm bill, as you mentioned, ag labor that's still hovering out there, a huge issue for many facets of agriculture. And then let's just break it down to animal agriculture. You've got the Proposition 12 and Question 3 debate, and then you've got disease. There's a lot of things that are just facing animal agriculture that need resolution.
You know, ag labor is probably the single biggest issue left facing American agriculture that needs to be resolved. And for years and years and years, members of Congress have told us that we hear you, we agree with you that there is a problem with ag labor, but we can't fix it until we've secured the border. And what we've now heard from the administration, President Trump himself has said the border is secure, that there were zero crossings at his last cabinet meeting, he reported in the previous month that there had been zero crossings across the southern border. And so, you know, the border secure, the One Big Beautiful Bill dramatically increased funding for enforcement. We are seeing that they are very actively out looking for the criminals, the members of gangs, the drug dealers, and making sure that those individuals are deported. That is all, you know, something that President Trump committed to in the campaign, and as claiming accurately that he has succeeded on. And so with his success there, it's time for us to now move back to the crisis at hand and solve the ag labor problem. And we're going to need support from Congress, and we're going to need support from the administration. There are things the administration can do through rule and reg. And then there are parts that just frankly need congressional legislation. And we have seen legislation pass the Senate. We've seen it pass the House on a couple of occasions. We've never been able to get to the finish line. But this is must pass legislation at this point that, you know, if we don't solve this problem, we're going to lose American farms. This isn't about, you know, necessarily, you know, we talk about crops rotting in the field or what have you. That's not what worries me. What worries me is that farms are just going to shut their doors because they can't compete in the global market with cheap labor from around the world. And they're going to have to close their doors. And, you know, that's a national security issue. The country needs to be able to feed itself. You know, for the first time, you know, since in my time paying attention to agriculture, you know, in the last administration, we imported more food than we exported. You know, that's an incredible thing for American agriculture to do, to have value of imports exceed value of exports. And here's our opportunity. We need to move forward, and we need to be able to do it in a way that makes, you know, labor reliable, high-skilled labor that's reliable, that we can afford, that allows us to compete in that global marketplace. Because if we're going to meet the rest of the demands of the administration around trade and making things in America, around MAHA and having more fruits and vegetables and dairy products and protein for kids, and around, you know, even the DOGE piece where we're reducing spending on programs, if you're going to meet those needs, you're going to have to either import a lot of food, or you're going to have to import labor so that farmers can meet those demands. And I think that the American people would much rather see us import labor in order to meet that food need and grow it here in America than they would like to see us import that food from around the world.
Well, I'm going to quote Ken Hartman again, the president of the National Corn Growers, when he says, "Jeff, we need demand. And trade is an obvious area where we have been lacking, especially in soy, but in products, and now with the tariff wars going on, how do you see this trade situation, and what are your hopes for the farm cooperatives?"
You know, this is one that's really hard for farmer cooperatives, because even if you get to a place like we did in the last administration where you have trade assistance payments that help make farmers whole while you're going through the time period, the transition of the negotiations, you know, the businesses that farmers invest in don't have that type of payment. And so we have to have a market to sell to. And so this is something that we are very concerned about. You know, being able to sell into that global market is really important for a number of our cooperatives. And frankly, it's important for those farmers that you mentioned as well. You know, China hasn't ordered a single boat of new crop soybeans yet. Not one. That's a market that at one time was our largest market. And, you know, that market has been highly, you know, at this point ceded to Latin America and so in South America. So this is not something that, you know, when you lose those markets, oftentimes they don't come back. And we never recovered from the 2017 loss in the Chinese market. So extraordinarily concerned about the risk to the market. And on the same token, you're seeing increased cost of inputs. And so whether it be fertilizer costs or steel and aluminum, you know, the tariffs on steel and aluminum have an impact on your ability to build grain storage, have an ability to build you know, equipment that, you know, farmers are buying every year. Those types of things are costs that, you know, both farmers and cooperatives are going to eat. And on the backside, having a risk of not having a market is a problem. So you ask, what do I want? You know, I want the president to be successful in these negotiations. I think that he is appropriately focusing on opening up non-trade barriers for agricultural products. And I want him to be successful and to get these markets open. But I also need certainty. You know, we've seen on average about once every 3 days a change in policy around a tariff or a trade deal with some country in the world. You know, it's really hard for any business to invest to build stuff in America when you don't know what the policy is going to be in 3 days. And so, you know, we understand that what the president is trying to do, but we need them to be able to get to some success here and get to a conclusion so that we have a little bit of certainty in what the market's going to look like and the ability to sell those products into the global marketplace.
What's the financial state of the nation's farm cooperatives, and how sensitive and critical is the time that we find success now for them to maintain and to grow?
There's a lot of different types of farmer cooperatives. So any broad-based statement I'm going to have is going to probably, it's probably going to leave a few of my members saying, wait, he doesn't understand. So I'll start with that. But I would say that the farmer cooperatives have had a couple of very good years financially and are financially secure. You've seen some consolidation that's been happening across the board, but they're okay right now. And as a result of that, they've been able to help support farmers' bottom lines. That being said, when farmers have tough economics, cooperatives have tough economics. And I would say that the economics of the U.S. farmer today, depending on what sector you're in, are probably harder than they've been in the last several years. And, you know, that's something that is going to impact, you know, not only farmers and ranchers, but it also impacts their farmer-owned cooperatives. At the moment, I think we're able to help be a little bit of support from a financial standpoint, that the business it has done well and it has helps that balance, overall balance sheet for their farmer owners. But that's not going to be a long-term thing if we don't solve some of these issues around markets, around trade, you know, and candidly around the bigger issues on the farm bill that we still need to get done.
Well, Duane, let's look ourselves toward the horizon and tell me the things that you're encouraged about from the perspective of the National Council of Farmer Cooperatives and what tomorrow could look like for your members and for the industry.
I was just this week out at a members cooperative days. They were hosting a number of their farmer members and vendors there, and they were talking about farming. They weren't talking about public policy, which is an encouraging thing. It's always good, I think, for people in Washington to get out of Washington and go talk to the farmers on the ground and see what it is they're doing. You know, I do think that agriculture's best days are ahead of it. You know, we talked about all the things that we need to get done in order to meet those headwinds. But the technology that is available to farmers today will blow your mind if you haven't been inside of a tractor in the last 5 years. If you haven't been on a dairy farm in the last 5 to 10 years, you would be shocked to see all of the ability to measure with sensors how that cow is doing. Every part of agriculture is being touched by data, by new equipment and sensors, that I think that we're on the cusp of a revolution, that we're going to continue to see improvement in the way we farm, in the way we bring those products to market, and candidly, the type of information that consumers ultimately are going to have about the products that they're buying in the grocery store. I think that is extraordinarily exciting. I think that it's the type of thing that younger consumers are going to demand. And I think agriculture is well suited to meet that demand and will do so. I'm terribly optimistic. I'm one of the last optimists in Washington. I don't know. But I do think that when we work through these challenges, that our best days are still ahead of us for farmers and ranchers across this country.
Well, Duane Swenson, I want to thank you for taking time to talk to us on this edition of Open Mic. And in your new position, I look forward to working with you and the cooperatives throughout your career. Hopefully there'll be plenty of other times that you'll be able to come back and share information with us. This is your first time and you are the guest, and the guest on Open Mic has the last word.
Well, Jeff, thank you for the opportunity to be here. And, you know, I am excited about the future for agriculture. I think what I'd like to say to your listeners out there is I'd like the opportunity to reintroduce myself to you. So I know many of you from my years, in the private sector, and here's an opportunity in this role to look me up. Let's have a conversation and let's talk about how we can work together to make agriculture better for our farmers and ranchers and obviously the businesses that they own. And I am out and throughout the countryside trying to meet with our members and with their owners and obviously here in Washington meeting with folks. So please don't be a stranger. I look forward to the opportunity to work with the entire ag community.
Our thanks to Duane Simpson, President and CEO of the National Council of Farmer Cooperatives, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by the American Sugar Alliance. America's sweetest industry creates jobs and provides a sustainably produced food ingredient. Learn more at sugaralliance.org. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Daly.